Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a doctor of physical therapy, confident optimist, and an entrepreneur. She spent the first 7 years of her career working within the hospital system in New York before deciding to start a side hustle. She began taking physical therapy clients on the side, and before she knew it, she had realized she wanted to start her own practice. She's now the founder of a concierge physical therapy practice in New York City. And in her spare time, she hosts a podcast for professionals in the physical therapy space called Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart. Now, let's hack. Karen Litzy. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Snappa, the fastest way for entrepreneurs to create graphics. Getting your business up and running can be hard, and growing it is another hurdle altogether. It seems like we just never have enough time to do all the things we know we should be doing in our businesses. The things that matter. Things that will help us and our brands stand out and grow. Creating great social media artwork or blog post artwork or show if you have a podcast like myself. All these things take a long time and can be very, very difficult, but creating images that look great and can be shared doesn't have to be hard. With Snappa, they put it into 5 simple steps. Here's how it works. You start with the perfect image dimensions in one click. Then you head over to the pre-made templates and you never have to stare at a blank screen again. Then just find free high-resolution stock photos right inside of Snappa and stop paying for stock photos. Then simply add your text, graphics, and effects in seconds, literally. Then click schedule and share your graphics instantly on social media, again, without leaving Snappa. Done. Now get back to running your business, doing what an entrepreneur should be doing. Snappa was built to make graphic design easy for entrepreneurs like you and I. Go to snappa.io/hack. That's snappa.io/hack. And make 2017 the year you start looking like the real business that you are. Stop wasting time. Start using Snappa. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Karen. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Oh, I'm excited too, let's say. And I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and I think you're going to have a lot to share. So I'm looking forward to this. What do you say? Should we jump into it?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, Karen. I know you are a woman of many hats, but today we're talking to Karen, the entrepreneur. So Karen, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, I think the one thing that I do and the one thing that I think I'm quite good at is listening. So I really make sure that I am listening to the patients that I see. I make sure that I'm listening to the people on my team. And I make sure that I listen to the advice that I'm given, whether it be from family, friends, clients, mentors. And I think that I do a good job at listening and then taking that advice that is given to me and putting it into action. So one of my friends always says that I'm the person that if I say I'm going to do something, then I do it. And so, but I think that in order to make those action plans, you really have to listen to others and of course, listen to yourself as well. And I think that's been one thing that's really helped build my entrepreneurial spirit and help build my business.
Nice. I like this. I like this. One thing to be known as the person who says they're going to do something and then does it, that's probably feels pretty good.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of a lot of people. But this idea of, say, like as a business owner and to your clients and to your team, that makes sense. But getting advice from other people, whether your family or something, but taking that advice and then taking action on it, I think it's what we call like being coachable. And not everybody has this ability. Lots of people get the advice and then they just kind of bullheadedly do what they were going to do anyways. So is this ability to be coachable, Karen, is this something that's sort of innate within you, or have you had to develop this over time?
I think it's a little bit of both. And a lot of it, I think it goes way back to when I was 4 or 5 years old and started playing sports. So I was a gymnast for many years. I played softball for many years, and all of that involves a coach. And I think that I got really good at being able to listen to what the coaches tell me, interpret that, and then again, going back to that kind of taking action, but then taking action on that. And I think it goes all the way back to then to being coachable. And I think it's interesting that you bring up being coachable, because oftentimes people think, oh, well, you go into entrepreneurship so that you're the boss, you know, and that you're the one that is making all the decisions, and you're the only person you need to listen to. And I'm so happy that you brought up being coachable, because I think being a successful entrepreneur, you need to be coachable. Even the most successful entrepreneurs have been coached along the way and continue to do so. But I would say it goes back to just being a kid and being able to sit and listen and interpret and then take what I need from that coaching and make it my own and put it into my own thoughts and words and processes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. And it makes sense that when you started off because of your background in like sports and gymnastics, because it's funny because in sports, you don't take it as like an affront to you that you need a coach to get better.
But exactly. Yeah. Even, you know, NBA, NFL players, they need a coach.
And that's just understood, and everybody's cool with it. And that's how people play at such these high levels all the time. But when you don't have that team around you in that sport, I think a lot of people take offense thinking that, what does that mean? I can't do it myself. Mm-hmm. So they don't want coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a big way to set yourself back, because you need, it's as an entrepreneur, you can't do everything yourself. You just can't. It's just impossible. Believe me, I've tried. I'm sure you've tried. We've all tried. And you just can't do it yourself. And so that's why having a mentor or a coach is so important. But it's also important to make sure you have the right mentor, the right coach, and that it's the person that you have free communication with and trust with. Otherwise, like you said, they're going to tell you to do something and you're going to say, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm just going to do my own thing. So you need to have open communication and trust and respect from that coach or from that mentor, I think, in order to be able to implement their ideas into your own world.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't trust or respect their opinions, then obviously it doesn't matter how coachable you are, you're going to think that they're asinine comments, and right, you need to find a coach that works better with you, or is at your level, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So this has led back from your childhood and then through sports. So if we can, Karen, can we go back to your, like, the beginning of your entrepreneurial sort of journey? I'd like to know sort of if you could tell us how you sort of discovered that you were an entrepreneur, and then how you decided to quit a job and become an entrepreneur.
Sure. So when I first graduated from college as a physical therapist, I went and I worked in a hospital system, which is pretty typical for a lot of people in the medical field. You know, you go, you work at a clinic or you'll work in a hospital system. And I did that for about a year. And then I moved to New York City. When I moved to New York City, I just couldn't find the job that fit me the best. And so then I ended up working at a large gym. And in this gym, I saw a lot of the personal trainers who I thought they just worked at the gym and that was it, but they didn't. They also had a side business or a side hustle where they were seeing clients outside of the gym in their homes. And I thought, well, this like blew my mind, you know? I was like, well, wait a second. So you can actually kind of have this full-time job and have this other side gig, and everyone's okay with that and it works. And so that's when I first got that spark of, well, if they can do that, then maybe I can do this. And so I started seeing some people on the side, and I was still working at the gym. And then I went to a couple of physical therapy offices in the meantime, and I started seeing more and more people on the side. And then I realized, you know, I think I really like this entrepreneurial side of things. I like the business side of things. I think I'm pretty good at it. And so I quit my full-time job, which was, as you can imagine, a little unnerving because there went all my benefits and everything else. And I started working for some friends of mine who had a PT clinic downtown, part-time, 20 hours a week. And then I slowly built up my side business or my side gig. And it was sort of like, at first it was sort of balanced, you know, if you look at like the scales. So everything was balanced. I was seeing about the same in the clinic and the same outside of the clinic. And then it started to shift. The scale started to weigh a little bit heavier on clients outside. And finally, I decided to give up that part-time job and take the full plunge into full-time entrepreneurship. But I only did that after a very thorough review of my finances. Because people, I get asked all the time by other physical therapists, well, how do you know when you're ready to, you know, quit your full-time job or quit your part-time job and go all in on your own? And the first thing I say is, well, mentally you may be ready, but you better check out your finances because you got bills to pay. I mean, I live in New York City. It's super expensive to be here.
Exactly.
And I would never say to someone, if you feel you can do it, then just go for it. Because what if you don't have the cash flow to do that? And that's part of being an entrepreneur. That's part of being a business person, is you need to know where your cash flow is coming from. And so when I crunched the numbers, I realized what I was doing in 40 hours of work per month in the clinic, I could do in like 5 on my own. So that was kind of a no-brainer. And it was really hard and emotional to break those ties, but I did it. And I think it was the best decision.
Nice. I love it. I love it. And you're right. And keeping that sort of, I guess, like a conservative approach to the money, where it's coming from, starting as a side hustle and slowly building up that client base, it's a really, really, really smart way to do it. And probably gives you by far the best odds of success.
Yeah. And peace of mind, you know, because otherwise, I mean, I'm very type A, and, you know, financial things can stress me out every once in a while. And if I didn't have that part-time job and know that I kind of had that cushion, I would have had to be doing a lot more yoga.
Fair enough, but that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing, but you can't do yoga 24/7, and that's probably what I would have needed.
Exactly. And then, so when did you decide to then, you're branching out, I don't know if it's beyond it or sort of like, I guess it's running sort of parallel with it, with the podcast and the blog, Healthy, Wealthy, Smart. What's sort of the thinking behind this?
It's interesting. When I first started this podcast, which was about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago now, I just kind of fell into it, which sounds crazy, but it was actually at like an online radio channel.
Oh, wow.
So I went to a place and I rented the space. And the reason I did that was I was a guest on my friend's show within this same network. And the producer said, oh, you seem smart. You have a good radio voice. Do you want your own show? So I was like, let me think about it. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? So I did this for a little while. And then as technology improved, as you know, with surrounding podcasting, then it didn't make sense to go and pay to use a studio. I can just do it from my apartment. And I also went and got my doctorate. So I kind of took 2 years off of doing the podcast because I was in school and working. So once I kind of got back into doing the podcast more regularly, it was also around that time that I took Marie Forleo's B School. And I realized, you know, there are ways to branch out here beyond just seeing patients one-on-one or that sort of time for money exchange. You know, there are other ways to branch out and to kind of get my message out to a wider audience and, you know, maybe make a little extra cash on the side. And so I sort of took the familiarity of the Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart podcast and did a couple of online summits, which was a lot of fun. And I'm probably working on another one soon. But the podcast for me has been a great education. because, you know, as you know, you get to speak to so many different people and I get so much nuggets of knowledge from every person that it's really helped to expand my mind, expand my business, and I think expand my brand.
Right. Was there a thought of, because the idea of sort of branching it out, but of like maybe productizing the like physical therapy business?
So productizing my own business.
Yeah. Well, like meaning staying right within what you were doing with physical therapy, but like productizing it as in like creating info products or courses or trainings around physical therapy and health, or is that what Healthy Wealthy Smart is for?
Well, what I do with the Healthy Wealthy Smart, the products that I've created through that have been targeted mainly to other physical therapists.
Oh, nice.
Right. So sort of a business to business versus business to customer. The thing with doing products specifically directed at customers is it becomes a whole sort of legal issues around what you can do as a licensed medical professional. And things get a little sticky and a little tricky. So it's easier to do a business to business model, which I've done with, as far as, you know, productization, product to customer, it's much, much stickier. So it's, and again, that goes around restrictions with our license, because we're licensed professionals in the state in which we practice. And so there are a lot of parts of our state practice act that don't allow for certain things and maybe don't allow, that could be considered telehealth. And when you're doing things with telehealth in the, so for example, in New York State, I can only work with people who live in New York State.
Right. Okay. Okay. So that's, so you did obviously think about it. It was just that you're licensing in the
sure,
way.
For sure. I definitely thought about it. And I'm sure that there are ways, I mean, there are other PTs that are certainly putting out physical therapy related content. But again, a lot of that I'm seeing is directed to the a business, directed toward other therapists. I'm sure there are ways to create like a great blog that's a little bit more directed toward the consumer, which I think there's not enough of, quite frankly. And you're giving me some good ideas. Then, of course, you just have to find ways to kind of monetize that blog in a way that is consistent with your practice act.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so that's why. Okay. And that totally, as soon as you started saying it, it's like, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know the laws at all involved in having the license, so, and teaching that information. So,
right.
But yeah, it seems like a really, like a market that's probably ripe for it. If
oh, I think it's
work
much
your
needed.
Way through it. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Very cool. So at the beginning, Karen, you said that your one thing is the ability to listen. Now, every business expert talks about the 80-20 rule of business. You're supposed to find that 20% of the work that gives you 80% of the results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Mm-hmm. Can you, Karen, please tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Oh, I am the worst at writing. I am not a great writer. And therefore for the podcast, you'd have to do show notes and, you know, you want to make it look professional. So you need graphics, you need all this stuff. I'm terrible at all of that. And it was around this time last year that I had sort of that aha moment of like, you know, I really suck at this and my time is much better spent elsewhere. Whereas I can hire someone to do these things for me. And that's what I did. So I set out and I found an intern who's actually a physical therapy student who lives in California. And she is a beautiful writer and is much better than I am. So she does the show notes. And I found a virtual assistant who is great at making graphics and doing a lot of the IT stuff that's needed for both for my podcast and even for my patient website. And it's just taken the stress and the load off of me immensely. And, you know, I used to think, oh, I can't, that's going to be so expensive. And it's actually not, because the time that I'm saving by not doing this stuff, I'm actually out there treating patients and doing more growth generating work versus me trying to fiddle around for an hour to do a graphic when my virtual assistant can do it literally in 5 or 10 minutes.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So believe me, I did it sort of an inventory of the 80-20 rule, right? I did an inventory and I said, this is what I love to do. This is what I like to do. This is what I hate to do. This is what I'm good at. This is what I'm bad at. Cross-referenced. And there you go.
And you found it right there.
Yeah.
How did you track down an intern?
So I went on to a Facebook group that I'm a part of. And each week, the admin of the Facebook group has a thread that says, hey, who's looking for something? And so I went on and said, I'm looking for a virtual assistant. And I was very, very specific about what I was looking for and what I needed. And a couple of people responded. I interviewed some people and just found this great woman who lives in Atlanta, and we were a perfect fit. And she does the exact things that I was looking for. So I always say, when you're looking for someone, just make sure that you're as specific as possible for what you're looking for, and don't be wishy-washy about it.
Nice. I like it. I like it. And if this intern did the writing on your client site on KarenLitzy.com, like your about page or something, I was going to say that's like excellently written.
Okay. She did not. Now that about page. Oh,
New that York. Was either you and you're a good author and you don't think you are, or
it was your intern. No. Trust me. That was not me.
Oh, okay.
Because that is written very, very well. And thank you for that. One of my best friends is a PR professional, and I sent her my bio. And she wrote back, are you kidding me? Well, maybe with some other words put in there. And she said, I am going to rewrite this because there's no way you can put this out for public consumption. And so she rewrote the whole thing and really made it flow like a story. And I'm super grateful for her work.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's really, really, really well done.
Yeah.
I'll link to it in the show notes for everyone, just so you can see what we're talking about. But if you were telling me that you're not a good writer and I'm reading that, I was like, come on. But okay.
Yeah. Now, see, if only you saw the original draft, you would be like, yeah, you're right. You are not a good writer. You know what it is? I went to school for a physical therapist. I'm a very scientific writer.
Okay. So
I don't know the nuances of storytelling. I'm getting better because I'm practicing. It's because it's one of the things I'm bad at. I am practicing at getting better at that. But I am sort of a facts and figures kind of gal, and I write like you would read in a journal.
Right. Typically not the most exciting.
No.
At least not for someone who's not scientific.
Right.
All right, Karen. Earlier you said how you told us sort of the story of how you started a podcast 4.5 years ago. So I want to move to projects today. And so projects is a loose term, but any sort of project you want to start within your company or a new project altogether, I would like to know right now, when an idea comes to you or is brought to you, how do you decide, and whether it's a written process or an internal gut process, but how do you decide when a project is now worth yours and now your team's time, energy, and resources?
That's a great question. And I do have a project that right now I just submitted to do a talk at a conference later this year. And after I submitted that talk, I said to myself, you know, this would make a great online program for other physical therapists. And it's basically telling people my story, how I took this sort of side hustle into a full-time career. And the more, what's so crazy is, you know how when you put things out into the universe, you kind of get signs that, yeah, this might be worth your time? So I submitted that talk and I spoke to my virtual assistant about, you know, I think this would make a really great online course, but I'm not 100% sure. Well, wouldn't you know, the next 2 or 3 days in some physical therapy Facebook groups I'm in, people were asking, hey, how do you start seeing patients on the side when you still have a full-time job? Or, hey, I've been doing this for a while. How do you know when it's time to leave your full-time job and go with your side gig? And so I took that as some major signs from the universe as saying, you know something, you put this out there, you submitted this talk, and within a week, all of this is popping up onto your Facebook page. And so I really believe that that's a sign, and that there's a need for this information? And so that's one way I judge, is it worth my time? I really go with a gut feeling. And then once I put it out there, and this happens to me all the time. You probably hear this a lot from other entrepreneurs, but once I put it out there, I just get all these little signs that says, you know, I think this is what you're meant to do. And so that's one way. And then, you know, I've been approached to do other projects. And if I feel like it doesn't align with my values and with my vision of where I see myself and my business going, then I just will say quite simply, thank you so much for thinking about me. This is a great opportunity, but I don't think it's a right fit for me right now.
Fair enough. And so to go back to this course idea, mm-hmm. you've sort of put it out there. You've got feedback from the universe that, yes, this is something that is like really, really needed, especially, and you've answered it literally with your story and what you've done. Mm-hmm. So what is your next step now? Like, have you decided that you're going to create this course? Can we?
Yes. So there we go. Yes, I've decided I'm going to create it. I spoke with my virtual assistant the other day. We're going to start probably at the end of March, only because I have four talks between now and March, kind of here in the US and then in Europe. And so once those talks are over, which will be the end of March, then I can put full steam ahead onto this. And after having a meeting with my virtual assistant, Courtney, we have decided what platform we're going to use. I have actually someone who's going to be helping me get through, because we're going to use Teachable. So I have someone who's just used it, who's going to kind of show me the nuances and ins and outs of that. And we're just going to get it going. And because I already outlined this talk that hopefully I'll be approved for and can give in November, I already have the framework about which to start. And a lot of times that's the hardest part, right? So I have the framework to start. And now it's just, for me, once I have an outline, I can plug things in really quickly. And that will probably start in the spring.
Nice.
With rollout maybe in the fall, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I like this. So you're taking the outline, turning it, because I was going to say, like, what's your next step? Because I know like people, they can be in your position, then they've heard about online courses, and then they get the idea for one, but then what do you do next? So you've got your outline, you're going to use that to outline your course. And you say that you can basically, once you have that outline, you can plug anything in, you're comfortable with it. So what right now is like one apprehension you have about launching a course?
That no one's going to want to buy it, that nobody cares. That's probably a big apprehension, or that people will take the course and say, oh my God, why did she do this? She doesn't know what she's talking about. You know, it's that imposter syndrome that always creeps into my brain whenever I start to do something. So I just have to keep kind of pushing it, like pushing it back down, and continue to tell myself, no, you do know what you're doing. You've gone through this. You know what to do. You know how to teach this. You've been through it. So that's probably my biggest apprehension, because I used to be really apprehensive about all the technical stuff, but now that I have a team that knows how to do all that, I don't have to worry about it so much.
That's awesome.
You know?
So I'm just going to coach you through this little bit, even though you're not asking me to. But when you say that you're worried that nobody will care, I think it's kind of a good mindset shift to think that nobody will care. And just bear with me, because nobody's going to care until you make them care. It doesn't matter who we are and what we create. Nobody cares about it nearly as much as you or at all until you kind of get the marketing behind it and then get it out there. And I don't mean that nobody will care once they like buy into it and get through the course. They'll love it. But at the beginning, nobody does care. And I think that's usually a better way to go into it, because otherwise you put all this effort into creating this thing and then you're ready to sell it on day one. Now you're like, how do we make people care? And then nobody cares. But I think if you're expecting nobody to care right at the beginning and you have to make them care, I think it's a better way.
Yeah.
So that's my...
No, I like looking at it that way. Instead of framing it as no one's going to like it, rah, framing it more like, you know, no one is going to like it until I tell them why.
Exactly. And they're going to love it once they get into it. But you have to make them care to show them the value beforehand because everyone's busy. Everyone's doing other stuff.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you definitely, you got this. I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be cool.
Yeah, me.
All right, Karen. So this has been a really fun conversation. I want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I can.
Shoot.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we're always projecting our personal successes into the future. So in 1 month when you get accepted to do that talk in November, in 6 months when you stand on that stage in Europe, whatever it happens to be, the second before you hit that goal, you're going to set five bigger ones into the future. And although I agree we have to do that, sometimes it doesn't matter what we accomplish, we still always are going to be successful the next time, the next time. So I would love it right now if you could stop, turn and look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses, but tell me how you feel about your whole entrepreneurial journey up until today.
So how I feel about my whole entrepreneurial journey up until today, I think it would be, oh boy, that's a good question. I feel confidently optimistic, not even cautiously optimistic, but confidently optimistic. Because I look back and I look at back at some of the struggles I've had. And from each of those struggles, I've learned so much so that I'm not going to make that mistake again. So I'm confident in my ability to not make those mistakes again. And I'm optimistic in that there's so much that I have yet to learn. And so I feel like once I can learn, like, let's say putting this course together, learning a new platform, talking with new people, getting advice, being coached, like you said earlier, I'm really optimistic that that's only going to make me a stronger entrepreneur, but also a stronger person. And in the end, you know, one of my biggest promises to myself is to constantly be learning, to be constantly in search of new knowledge, in order to make myself better, to have a big impact on the world. And so if what I've done in the past, I think, has certainly been consistent with that, and hopefully I can just continue to learn in the future, always having that sort of mantra in mind.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. All right, Karen, we've got to talk about your business and the podcast in passing. Could you now specifically tell the listener about your business and where they can track you down online?
Absolutely. So I have a concierge physical therapy practice in New York City, and which means I go to the home. So kind of like back in the old days when doctors used to do house calls. So I do house calls. I see patients in their homes or in their offices. And you can find out more about that at KarenLitzy.com. And the podcast is called Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart. And people can find that at podcast.healthywealthysmart.com. And it's on, you know, iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and SoundCloud and all that fun stuff. And the podcast, I interview sort of influencers and thought leaders in the world of physical therapy and health. And I also love to promote female entrepreneurship on my show. So I try and have a lot of those ladies on, and I kind of always weave it back into healthcare and physical therapy.
Excellent. And you are quite prolific on Twitter.
I do love Twitter.
Nice. So that's at Karen Litzy NYC.
Correct. Yes.
Excellent. I'm going to write that down. Okay. So KarenLitzy.com is the site for the physical therapy practice, and the podcast is also linked off of the navigation menu there.
It is.
The podcast is Healthy, Wealthy, and Smart, and Karen is on Twitter. I'll link to all of that in the show notes for you, so it's very, very easy for you to find on Hack the Entrepreneur. Karen, once again, thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for joining me on the show, and please just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and thank you for having me on. This has been great, and I've learned so much from you already, so I'm excited, and I can't wait to listen to more episodes of your podcast as well. I've been loving them.
Thanks. You've heard me go on and on about the 80-20 rule. To find the 20% that gives you the 80% of the results. You leverage these points to grow our businesses in 2017. Snappa was built for us entrepreneurs trying to find our 20%. The entrepreneurs who want to stand out this year, but also
want to harness the power of 80-20. Snappa was built to be your 20%. Simple graphic design for entrepreneurs to stand out in their market. Go to snappa.io/hack. The fastest way for entrepreneurs to create graphics. Well, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed very, very much talking to Karen and hearing her story and the journey. And I appreciate that she didn't make me call her doctor. I know some people with doctorates, they've worked hard to get it. So they expect to always be called that. And Karen told me before we started that I could call her Karen. And I really appreciated that. So we've reached the point in the show where I need to go back through the conversation and listen to it. Listen to it as you get to listen to it. So I did. I went back through the conversation. Then I went back through the conversation again. Then I went back through the conversation again. That third time that I went back through the conversation, there was something I had missed that was there. It was there right in front of me, and I have no idea how I missed it. It was that one thing that Karen said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Being a successful entrepreneur, you need to be coachable. Even the most successful entrepreneurs have been coached along the way and continue to do so.
And that's the hack. Karen, Karen, Karen. So short, so sweet, so perfectly said. This idea of being coachable is so crucial. And you've probably noticed through listening to the show that I've started to ask more people about their coachability, about if they use coaches, advisors, consultants, whoever it could be to learn. When you want to accomplish something, when you want to learn something, when you want to achieve something, it's so much better to ask somebody who has been there before and accomplished what it is you want to accomplish. But you have to do it with the idea of being coachable. And I'm really stuck in wondering why we oftentimes put a negative context to it when it's outside of sports. I am not a sports person, but it's been brought to my attention in the fact that as an athlete, and especially if you're like an achieving athlete who's trying to do, I guess to try and become a professional athlete or whatever it happens to be, you can see my ignorance in sport right now. But it's the idea of having a coach or multiple coaches, but it's not just hearing what they say and then not doing anything with it. It's absolutely becoming coachable and trusting your coach to guide you and to level you up, if you will. And this is really, really, really crucial. And you're going to find the further you get into entrepreneurship that entrepreneurs who are accomplishing big things have mentors, advisors, coaches. And not only do they have them, but they've taught themselves to become very, very, very coachable. Next time somebody gives you a piece of advice or is coaching you, really, really think about that, about being coachable and about accepting and trusting the guide or the coach to show you the proper way and to just get rid of everything that you think you know about what it is you're trying to learn. And trust fully into your coach. And that's how to become coachable. That's how to accomplish the things you want to accomplish. Karen, thank you so very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. Head on over there and check out Karen's show notes. And you're going to see some cool artwork. Plus, head over to the blog if you want. I've been blogging every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, there's a new article coming out written specifically for you and to help you do the things you want. But notice while you're over there, the killer artwork. That killer artwork takes minutes for us to make because of Snappa, who is an awesome, helpful, very cool sponsor of this show during this first few months of 2017. And make sure you check them out if you would like artwork like that. Quickly too, snappa.io/hack will get you rolling with a 14-day free trial. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so very much for stopping by. I really, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.